Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, I'm going to break down the winners and losers in the SEC and the transfer portal. Am I going to talk about every team? I don't think I'm going to talk about every team. But I am going to kind of get into to the ecosystem of the SEC after all the decisions were made on the NBA draft. And after the final big portal decision, which was Milan Momcilovic, we were all kind of waiting. Would it be Kentucky? Would it be Louisville? Hey, Big Blue Nation, you got to win. You got to win. And I think you got to be pretty pumped about that if you're Kentucky, because I feel like you just went from, like, team that might have to hit a half-court heave again to win in the first round to second weekend. Looks like a pretty legitimate possibility. And then, you know, anything can happen when you get to the second weekend. It's been a Florida Basketball Hour mantra, so that's a good place to start. I'm going to be joined by my guy, Max Barr, tonight. And I got to say, Max Barr, I think, just period into discussion, one of the best in the business covering college hoops, one of the best young guys covering college hoops, but also just period, like, one of the best covering the SEC, end of discussion. And so I knew when I was talking college basketball and talking SEC portal winners, I had to get my guy Max Barr on at Max Barr CBB. So we will introduce Max here in a minute when he joins. Until then, kind of laying the groundwork and the scenery in the SEC. I'll get into some of the big-time players that are coming back with my guy Max. And, yeah, I'm in a hotel. If you're watching, you're looking background-wise, I'm traveling. I'm in Louisville. You guys know that I am an attorney and also an NIL, the legal team leader for an NIL group at Sandberg Phoenix, anyway, I'm in charge of our NIL practice, our sports law practice, so – traveling right now here in Louisville on some business. Louisville didn't win the Momcilovic battle, but I think very much situated for a Final Four style run. As a preliminary matter, you guys know that the best place to get content from Florida Basketball Hour, especially in the off season, is at our Patreon, patreon.com/FloridaBBHour. Make sure you join. I got to send Max Barr a new invite soon, I think, and make sure that my guy Max has access to the Patreon, because he's one of those guys that should always have free access. So when Max hops on here, we'll make sure he's there. But please go to patreon.com/FloridaBBHour. Support the podcast. And also, if you're watching on YouTube or you know that you can watch on YouTube, go over to our YouTube channel, FloridaBBHour, and pound that like button. That's another good way to engage with us and make sure that our viewership is up, that our sponsors are aware, that future potential sponsors are aware that we exist. Otherwise, you know, shout out to our guys at Stadium and Gale who run our partners at Stadium and Gale, and shout out to our partners at Game Time Sidekicks who sponsor every show that we have. If you go over there and spend $60 at GameTimeSidekicks.com, you get a free can koozie, skinny can koozie with your $60 expenditure, and also a break on your shipping. They've got all kinds of mugs, every shape and size. Every team in the SEC is covered over there, so no reason not to get over to GameTimeSidekicks and get your favorite SEC logo on there. And if you're watching this one, you're probably a fan of somebody other than Florida. You know, it's not just Neil Blackman, Florida basketball, our hosts, whose heart is torn on the occasional day from feast week to late March. No, the Tar Heels, it'll be interesting to see what happens with my boys. The Henry Vassar thing was not really something that anyone expected. And I'll tell you, in Chapel Hill, it has not gone well. It has not gone well. But we have my man, Max Barr. I'm here in Louisville in my hotel room, traveling on business. Louisville, a Final Four contender very much. Max, I was just saying that you're one of the best in the business, period. I was also saying we're not going to talk about every single team in the SEC, as much fun as that might actually be. If you guys are sadistic enough to want to go through that exercise, Blake Lovell and Max Barr have actually done it. But so what I did to make this work is I wrote down a top 25. Let me make sure that I should have wrote down before I even started this. I think I have 7 SEC teams in the top 25. I want to talk about those 7. And then what I'll do is after we talk about those 7, I'll say, hey, Max Barr, who did I leave out? And tell me why I messed this up. But Max, man, how are you?
That sounds like an absolute blast. The man, the myth here, working on it. We've got a Neil Blackman road game right now. Yeah. In the hotel room. It doesn't get any better than this on June 4th, talking some hoops. This is what it's all about right here.
I got a great view of the KFC Yum Center for my
there you go.
For my hotel window. No Florida fans, don't worry. The SEC Challenge people are not going to screw you and send you on the road. They know the marquee game. They're not stupid. Florida Louisville in the Yum Center would that be delicious. But I think Florida fans would riot if a year after going to Cameron they were shipped off on the road again. Framing all this, I really think like two things, and a lot of this I know you've covered with Blake because I religiously listen to you guys and don't miss a show, but I think the SEC will be the best league in college basketball next year. I also don't think it'll be particularly close. I think we're kind of reverting back to the year prior. And I honestly think, folks, that this is going to get cyclical, and it's really going to be about, like, retention from year to year as, like, an A subpoint. And then do teams make these big splashes? And I thought last year – Fawcett beat me to it, as he often does. But, like, I think last year, one thing the SEC did was a lot of teams, like, built strong depth pieces around their team, but, like, kept losing the battle for, like, big-time stars. And so what we had was sort of a league that, like, had Darius Acuff not been Darius Acuff, it would have been a league with, like, Tommy Houck, who's great, and Nate Amet, who was about as advertised. But, like, the high-level star power, you know, the obvious first-team All-American wasn't there, but for me, kind of defying those expectations. So I think this is sort of – I'm not going to say a return to the norm because that's not fair to the Big Ten or the Big 12, but I do think the SEC goes back to being that dominant league. And then the other, I guess, point I would make is that, like, I do think – and it's not just because of Florida – like, I do think there's an argument that retention is, like, part A. Mm-hmm. And I do think Michigan will be somewhat of an aberration. Like, I think building a title winner where almost all your key pieces came immediately out of the portal is really hard.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I don't know if we'll see that. We'll see it again. I just don't think it'll be, like, every year. Like, I think teams that retain pieces – and that recruit high-level high school players are more likely to win consistently.
No, I totally agree with that as well. And also, I mean, I feel like the Michigan formula is like so one-off because also when are you going to have a mid-major center translate to an immediate NBA three, who increases his 3-point production by like 700%.
Yeah.
It makes everything fit. Like, it's just, it's not going to happen very often.
It's so true. And like, I think I liked watching Merez Johnson almost anybody more than anybody in college basketball last year. And like, there was an element of where did that come from, especially in November and December.
With the shooting?
When he just looked like a totally different human being.
Yeah.
You know, and I know Dusty, like, I love Dusty. He's a friend of mine. Like, he pointed out at the Final Four, well, we're not all portal. And it's like, yeah, I know you have Will Shatter and Roddy Gale. And, like, I get it. But, and Trey McMurtry started the national championship game. He's a high school recruit. But, like, it was a portal team. And I think it was a portal team in that, like, it was an immediate portal team, too. Not, like, second or third year portal guys like Florida the year before. So, I think – I do. I think that's well said. It's kind of a one-off.
To your point, though, about the SEC being back, if you asked me, like, a month ago when we still had all the – a lot of question marks, I probably would have said I'm going to give the nod to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You know, I would just be like, look at the – because what I like to do in the off season to kind of get a gauge for, like, conference strength is pretty much just look at the front courts.
Yeah. Just,
you know, if it's the ACC-SEC challenge, or if you were to do a hypothetical SEC-Big Ten challenge, like, how many SEC front courts can we throw out there against David Mirkovich and the Ivicic brothers, or Aiden Sherrell and Yigitolu, or Farrell Payne, or Mustafa Chatman, like JP Estrella, you know, these Big Ten front courts. It's like, how many can does the SEC have where if they get in a hypothetical SEC against Big Ten, how many SEC teams do we have where it's like, yeah, I mean, we'll be fine. They'll be fine. They got size. They got depth. A month ago, didn't look too great. Right now, though, I think it's a lot better than it was. And even like a team like two teams where I don't love the star power of the front court, but the depth, Neil, is like Alabama and Auburn. It's like there's no star, but it's like you have Brandon Garrison, Drew Fielder, Keaton Bristow, and Davis Fleming from Mississippi State, who played all right minutes last year. You got four of them that are all 6'10 or taller. It's like, okay, you just need two of them to be able to play 20 plus minutes and be good. And then the same thing for Auburn with Buki Aboy, the Santa Clara transfer, and Owen Freeman, and Ngoy, the 7-footer. It's like, all right, you got three guys. You basically got 3 7-footers. Maybe none of them are going to be at the top of the recruiting rankings, but you got three of them. Like,
yeah,
that's a lot different than this past year.
That's such a good point. And like Alabama, we'll talk about them, but like that to me was, you know, that was the biggest difference to me, was like the guys they brought to aren't questions. Like, it's not like this has to work. And he came from, and I'm not just picking on Noah Williamson, because there are stories like that everywhere.
Right.
Right. But no, Nate Oates didn't do that this season. Like, it's people that he, like, you go and you get a guy who played productive SEC minutes. So, you know, that's different. And I think they know. I mean, like, you look at the top for a while, the top five teams in the country last year, when Houston was kind of on the edge of it, was like the exception. And even they had Chris Senak and JoJo Tuggler.
Exactly.
But like, man, people were just monsters, right?
Yeah.
And that's how Florida won the league by 3 games. It's just there are nights where, you know, it doesn't matter that Florida would get behind like 25-10 to Mississippi State, because eventually Florida's going to get 30 more rebounds than them.
Exactly.
And, you know, what do you do? So the other thing I think, and what I looked at retention because I think continuity matters. And then I just went – the other thing I did is I said, okay, let's look at like the top 25 players in college basketball. It's arbitrary to sort of rank the top 25. I admit that.
Yeah.
But it's only arbitrary to an extent. Like, there is sort of a consensus on who the top 30, 35, 40 players are. And like, for me, coming back – and this is in no particular order outside of the top, right? Like, I have Hauk and Tanner as probably two of the three best players in college basketball coming back. And then I think that's pretty not debatable. But then after that, like, you have Alex Condon. You have – this is just the people I wrote down. Alex Condon, Amari Allen, Ruben Chinyelu, Billy Richmond III, who I probably could have put above Chinyelu just because I love the upside so much. Yeah. Malachi Moreno, Mattis Vokatidis, Tahad Pettiford, Boogie Fland, and Darian Reed, like, are all guys I put in my top 30. And I, like, maybe I'm reaching on Darian Reed, but the talent is, like, indisputable. So I said, man, all those guys are from the SEC, right? And yeah, now you add Mila Momcilovic to that mix. And, you know, then you have guys just beyond that list, like Zoom Diallo. And I, it's just kind of like Josh Hubbard, I think I left out. And I just said, this is the best league. It's the best league.
Did you mention David Punch?
And I didn't even mention David Punch, who I think is fantastic. And it's why I went back and forth with Ryan Hammer a little bit about his top portal rankings, because last year he didn't have Vanderbilt in his top 10. And I was like, I kind of like what they did. And then this year he had Texas right outside of his top five. And I'm like, that's because you don't appreciate David Punch the way you should.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of Vandy, they loop right into that, what I just mentioned with Alabama and Auburn, teams that are just loading up size.
Yeah.
Like, Mark Byington literally came out in a press conference mid-season last year and said, we suck at rebounding. Like, I'd never heard a coach say that before. Like, just straight up, like, talk like me, you know. We suck at rebounding. We all know that. You know, like, that's what Mark Byington – that's what the rebounding made him get to last year. And now you got the seven-footer in Dak, basically a seven-footer in Buchtengel from Nebraska.
Yeah.
Sebastian Williams-Adams is a monster out there. Haven't mentioned Jaden Leverett, 6'11 sophomore, might take a little bit of a step forward. Like, this is going to be the most size Vandy's had in a long time. And –
yeah,
it's going to make a difference in these, you know, non-conference conversations when you're trying to, you know, talk about top teams versus other top teams.
Yeah. Todd Golden was talking about Byington in his, like, brief. He met with the media a few weeks ago. And, you know, they're just like, oh, well, there weren't a lot of coaching changes in the SEC, da-da-da-da, and, you know, what do you think of the top end of the league? And Todd was like, I don't know what Tyler Tanner's going to do. But he's like, I know that what's happening right now is that the top end of this league, there are programs that know what they want to be.
Hmm.
And he said, that's kind of like Rick Barnes, they know what they want to be at Tennessee.
Yep.
And we'll get to them too. But, like, all those bigs you just mentioned, well, almost all, three of the four of them are skilled dudes.
Yeah.
Like, not only did they get bigger, but, like, man, God, Dak can knock down a three.
Yep.
Like, he ain't going to put the ball – saying he can put the ball on the deck is a little bit like saying, like, Ruben Chinyelu can put the ball on the deck. Like, no, he can't. But he can hit a three.
Yeah.
You know, and you could play him out of the short roll a little bit. And he can run and catch, and you can certainly do that with the Nebraska kid.
Yep.
And Leverett is a guy that, like, I mean, he played great minutes against Florida in the SEC tournament.
He didn't look bad towards the end of the year at all.
Yeah. He played great minutes against everybody in the SEC tournament. So, I mean, Mark doesn't just, like, hit the portal for the sake of hitting the portal. And, like, Vanderbilt has nice NIL, and they spin with a purpose, and they build with a purpose. And, I mean, that's kind of what's separating, like, you know, if you're Nate Oates or you're Mark Byington or you're Todd Golden or you're Rick Barnes, those are programs that know what they want to do all the time, right? Sean Miller, same way. It's just this year, too. And that makes the league even more frightening, I think.
I mean, just if you want to talk about, you know, like the best league conversation, we talked a little bit about Texas. We talked a little bit about Vanderbilt. As long as Sean Miller and Mark Byington stay at those schools, I mean, I think, let's see, the Torvik way too early analytical projections. They've got Texas top 15, Vanderbilt top 25. Like, those are a little bit wonky, the way too early projections. But, I mean, no matter where you look, you're probably going to see Texas and Vandy both top 25. 2 years ago, that wouldn't happen in the SEC. Like, we've basically, just by Sean Miller and Byington being added to the league, the SEC's basically added two top 25-ish caliber programs now.
Yeah, it's so true. All right, we'll start with Florida in this top 25 list I made. And it's not that I'm trying to marginalize my guest. I'm not. Max Barton is far better at talking about the SEC than me, but
not when it comes to the Gators.
But we've got these teams that I listed down, and Max will tell us if he thinks I forgot anybody. But this is a good – I'll just use this. Listen, Brian Minnell asked, if you guys think Auburn and Alabama are trying to answer Florida at their front courts? Is the power of Florida basketball impacting the SEC? I just think front courts are impacting college basketball, period. It's less like a chasing Florida thing. Especially like Auburn would be like, well, we just won the SEC and went to the Final Four the year before. And I think Alabama would say – we've been the most consistent program this decade. And I think that would be true. Obviously, it's factual on the Auburn side and probably true on the Alabama side. Now, Alabama does have a Florida problem. Like, they have lost six in a row. Nate Oates even said after they came to Gainesville and got clobbered that, hey, look, Todd Golden, these guys have our number. We've got to figure out how to play better against them. I got bad news for Nate. This might not be the year.
I don't think so.
This might not be. It might not be their time. The retention job that Todd. I think Florida has the deepest roster in America.
Yeah.
It all starts with retention. I was in the locker room after the Iowa game, and I still didn't think. And now how? Couldn't speak really. He got a sentence out to me, and you're torn between like you're a journalist and then you're like a human being.
Yeah.
And so it was like enough is enough. I did kind of think that Chinyelu, pretty much. I drove home from Tampa that night thinking Chinyelu would probably come back. Because of the way that Ben McCollum kind of game planned around Chinyelu and exposed like the problems that he kind of has. But getting Houck back was astonishing. I think Condon made a very smart business decision that he never would have made 2-3 years ago.
Yep.
But it's the best front court in the country. And oh, by the way, they added Domen Petrovic, who is like a skilled wing four.
Didn't he just win league MVP for his international league?
Who just won international league MVP in his like U-20 Slovenian league where he averaged 17 points a game and shot 41% from beyond the arc. Florida's pretty frightening. I'm less concerned about the shooting. I remember I came on Southeast for 16 and I was like, what could go wrong? And Blake was like, what could go wrong? And I was like, well, maybe they can't shoot. But you know, AJ Brown is a good shooter. He's going to play some. Every staff member you speak to will start a sentence with Alex Lloyd within 30 seconds.
Okay.
They love him. They're like, he's going to have an opportunity to earn minutes, which is pretty surprising. And then if Aberdeen gets the waiver, which they're pretty confident about, then you add a 37% three-point shooter or 35.
What timeline on that of expectation, or is that just going with the flow?
They're not just being confident for confidence sake. They feel like it's pretty much common sense. He played 40 minutes as a freshman.
Yeah, it's that 1 year.
14 of them were in the NIT. In one game.
Yeah.
And, you know, Todd Golden has said, like, look, you know, there shouldn't be a different rule for college basketball than football. Some players in that situation have gotten the waiver. Some haven't. But they feel like they don't need 5 for 5 to be retroactive for him to get eligible.
Yeah.
They either think they can get him eligible through the waiver because the NCAA will do the right thing, or they'll TRO it and play him on it like Rashawn Agee. And by the time all the hearings are done, it'll be April. But he's on track to graduate. It's much more like I get a lot of Kentucky fans in my mentions that are like, I don't know why you're talking about Aberdeen. He's not playing. And I'm like, I'm pretty confident he's playing for Florida next year. I'd be surprised if that didn't work out. So they're confident in Lloyd if he doesn't. But, you know, Boogie Flan shot 37% from three the last month and a week of the season. And the thing about Boogie that people forget, not you and Blake, but people generally, is that he hasn't even turned 20 yet, Max.
And that's crazy to think. It's crazy.
Like, you know, so there's a jump that a kid makes from like 20 to 21, and Flan hasn't even hit that.
Yeah.
And it's his first offseason healthy. Like, I think that if they get the version that they got the last month of the season, people are probably in a lot of trouble when they play Florida.
Haven't even mentioned Klavchar, Isaiah Brown, or CJ Ingram.
Yeah, I mean, you got the sixth man of the year in the SEC. You know, Isaiah Brown needs to be more consistent, but some of the plays he makes, just they're like Billy Richmond. It jumps off the screen, right? And then CJ Ingram, another guy that has shown in flashes like – the massive potential is kind of a 3-and-D NBA guy. It's a scary roster. It's a scary.
Do you think Buttayevis or Jones Lay are going to get any run in and as a reserve there, kind of in like a maybe a minimized Han Lockton role, or will that mainly be more of a it's either going to be Ruben or Kondo?
I think Jones Lay like is not going to play. He'll developmentally redshirt. He came from a really good, I mean, that's a good program. The school that he went, Monrovia and prep in Hickory, North Carolina. But yeah, I mean, I think he's a redshirt. Buttayevis is interesting. Like in theory, having him play some of the Han Lockton minutes would be good. And they like that he's more versatile, that he can shoot the three mainly. So they can pick and pop him. I think it'll work out where that's not what happens. Like, I think what will end up happening is that CJ Ingram or Zay Brown will command those minutes and they'll play smaller. And then Alex Condon has said, like, he would like to play some more of the five.
Yeah.
And I think that's how it'll end up looking with Hauk playing some four.
Yeah. To answer Brian's question from earlier, though, like, are people just trying to chase Florida? I think it's what you said earlier in. Just programs, staffs that really have it nailed down what they're trying to be. I think that's more the formula, because if you looked at kind of the most success in college basketball over the last 4 years, everybody would be trying to find Alex Caravan for their team. You know, everybody would be trying to find the shooting four that you can trust to space the floor and play just rock solid everywhere else, kind of your glue guy shooter at the four. Or everyone would be trying to find their three different guards, their Butler 2021, you know, all 45% three-point shooters and everything. And so now, just because Michigan and Florida have had so much success just bullying teams, I feel like it's the new trend. But I think you really nailed it earlier, where it's just like whatever the identity and the keys to success for that staff is, just nailing those – you're going to find success in your own ways. More than one way to find success in college basketball right now.
Oh, for sure. So I had two SEC teams in my top 10. Okay. I had three in my top 11. I had Tennessee at 9. So I'm going to let Max Barr talk about Tennessee, and then I'll respond to you. We'll make this more fun.
So Tennessee, the thing with Tennessee is I think they're going to be much more like their Dalton Connect year, where Josiah Jordan James, Triple J, was manning most of the minutes at the four. I think that's going to be kind of your Jalen Harrelson role, transfer from Notre Dame. This is a guy that saw his star point guard get injured early, and as a freshman was just asked, hey, Jalen, I know you're kind of playing four and the three for us right now, but now you got to kind of be the one through the four, and just did everything. It's going to be a lot different than Jalen Carey at the four. I think your offensive rebounding rate is going to come way down. Probably going to be the lowest defensive efficiency that Rick Barnes has had in a few years. However, everything else should fly through the roof in terms of offensive efficiency, perimeter shooting, go-to scores type of stuff. I mean, the depth. The only thing I'm a little bit worried about here, Neil, is the potential for, like, what happens if D'Wayne Brown gets two fouls? Like, and it's Tennessee against Florida. You know, it's a top 15 game. You know, this is big time. We're battling for an SEC title here. And it's Miles Rubin and Jalen Harrelson trying to box out Ruben Chinyelu and Alex Condon. That's my only worry for Tennessee is the potential for maybe lack of elite big man depth, but everywhere else, you gotta love it.
Yeah, I like Miles Rubin because he's so efficient.
Yeah, good numbers.
And you know, I do think that like they're gonna get something from a rim protection standpoint from him that maybe like they don't get from a rebounding percentage standpoint.
Yep.
But the give and take may be okay. I've heard the like criticism that this isn't like the classic Rick Barnes team, and like I don't agree with that. Like I agree with you. I just think it's more of a connect looking one. But the build make like going and getting Marquis Clark is like Marcus Clark is exactly the kind of tough guy point guard that Rick Barnes always seems to have.
He's been rising this offseason. Heard a lot about him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Ralph Scott, you're adding a top 50 recruit who just seems like a fit for everything that they want to do and is the kind of Rick Barnes freshman that'll by February, you're gonna be, of course he plays 20 minutes a game. Of course he does. You know, and then the thing about Juke Harris, because I guess the criticism from the people who didn't get him, it's always the people who didn't get him who
right. left,
is like, well, he's not real efficient and, you know, he's not great from beyond. And it's like, I don't think people understand that that was the worst wing team that Steve Forbes has had from a talent standpoint. And like, Juke's just not going to be asked to do all the things that he had to do at Wake Forest. And I think he's going to be comfortable with that. And then I love Jalen Harrelson. You mentioned him. Orlando kid that I'm pretty familiar with.
Love him.
He's such a good cutter. Like, and they're like flex cuts.
Yeah.
Those little floppy actions where it's the second guy they run off the floppy that like, you know, he can cut out. He'll shoot. He had a 23% assist rate, which is preposterous for a crazy wing. And then you throw in Dede Ames, who kind of quietly was on a really good Cal team by their standards, at least of late. And you just have a lot of options, man.
Yeah.
Like, from an offensive efficiency, like you said it, like they're going to score.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is they're going to score in a lot of places, which is new for them the last couple of years. Where you don't have these late game possessions where it has to be a mid, or it has to be connect, or it has to be Zakai Ziegler. Like you're going to go out there and be like, I don't know, man. Like they've got Tyler Lundblade in the corner. You know?
Yeah.
What do we do? And that's interesting to me.
Yeah, Rick Barnes at Tennessee actually has only had two top 20 offensive efficiencies.
Wow.
They've only been a top 20, I mean, top 25. That was the Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield year, the Grant Williams' senior year, and then the Connect year. That's it.
Wow.
So I think you're going to get off at top 20 offense number three here. And those two teams, that was a Sweet 16 and an Elite Eight. So to anyone that's saying like, you know, oh, this is not the Rick Barnes team, they're not going to be able to play Rick Barnes basketball. The two times that they've had a top 20, you know, offense, it's gone fairly well.
They've also been like the last SEC team playing a lot. So I just don't, you know, there is a little bit of don't bet against Rick Barnes and me putting them ninth, but that's where I got them. I have Texas at 11. If you wanted to get in a big argument with me that Texas should be seventh, right, I would not fight anyone on that. I'd just be like, that's fine. Like Florida, some combination of Florida, UConn, Duke, wherever you want to put in Michigan State, wherever you want Illinois, maybe Houston, maybe Michigan. I'm a little more skeptical of Michigan than some people. No, I still think they're going to be in the top 10. I just don't. I think if they end up number two, I'm going to be like, eh.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, I could be convinced that Texas is seventh. Man, I love what they did. I just love what they did.
I love them also. I really do.
Yeah,
I think Texas is going to be one of the best teams in the league. Like top, I think they're a top three SEC team. And one element that I don't think a lot of people are, it's gonna be realized very quickly because teams are just going to. We were actually talking about this morning. People are going to hate playing Texas because of how many free throws they're going to shoot.
Oh my god!
Matas Vokitaitis, you guys, if you watched any Texas game this past year, you know that guy just. He got your opposing big in foul trouble almost immediately most times. So Vokitaitis's fouls drawn per 40 minutes, 8.3. That was third in the entire country. David Punch, 5.0. That was inside the nation's top 270. And then Isaiah Johnson, 5.8. That was 110th nationally. You have three different starters who last year averaged – five or more fouls drawn per 40 minutes, just the three of them. I mean, Isaiah Johnson last year, he only scored in single digits three times the entire season. It was 9, 9, and 8. I mean, I could make a pretty confident bet right now. Isaiah Johnson scores in double digits every single game. But I think people are sleeping on Isaiah Johnson a little bit.
Yeah, he's a ridiculously efficient player. He was top 150 in offense efficiency and free throw rate on a team that's not good.
Yeah.
Which that's really hard to do.
As a freshman.
Yeah, like Jeremiah Wilkinson didn't even do that, and he was ACC Sixth Man of the Year before he got to Georgia.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't get – like his offensive efficiency wasn't high enough. He had the free throw rate at Cal, but I think he'll really elevate them. And I also think, you know, I mentioned Ralph Scott. I think we often forget freshmen in these conversations. I don't want to forget that. I think Austin Goosby, like Rick Barnes, will get him comfortable.
Yeah.
And he'll be impactful. And then after that, the real story on this team for me is that they're going to be the second best defensive team in the SEC. Period. End of discussion. I don't think that there's an arguable team that's – I think Florida and Texas are going to be so far and above better than everyone on that end. And we'll see what happens with Arkansas, because I think if they could get a waiver for a certain seven-footer that many of you are familiar with, it could change some things about the way they look. But, man, Vokitaitis – they all run, right? So their transition defense is going to be better, which is last year it was like, if you can run on them, you can score. But if they get in the half court, you're in a lot of trouble. And, You know, now they've got Mikey Lewis, who upgrades the entire perimeter defense, which was like the one, you know, you could screen them a little bit in the half court last year and get some threes up. They're going to look like a rugged Sean. They're going to look like the Sean Miller teams that I watched in Arizona.
Yeah.
Actually.
If, and you could see like the development of Voki Titus throughout the year, like early in SEC play and big non-conference games, like Voki Titus foul trouble early, entire team for Texas, the entire makeup of this team, the way they play completely changes 5 minutes into the game because Voki Titus was too physical. And then down the stretch, you're looking at like some NCAA tournament games, 33 minutes against BYU, 31 minutes against Graham EK in the Zags, you know, like big time 30 plus minute performances. Give them another offseason and Voki Titus is going to be a 30 minute per game.
Yeah.
7 foot, 260 pounder. There's only a few of those in the country.
Yeah. No, he's a problem. He's a problem. It's going to be pretty fun. All right. The fourth team I had five SEC teams in my top 16. The fourth one that I've got is Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I love them. I might have them too low, honestly, because you mentioned the front court. I kind of want to see how that all works.
Yeah.
I think if Florida goes to Memorial Gym, that could be a lot of fun. Florida very clearly demonstrated in two games that they have no clue how to guard Tyler Tanner. You don't have to feel bad about that, Florida fans. That's pretty much everyone in America.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, it's sneaky. It's just going to be kind of lazy, I think. And you're going to hear it in a lot of places. You won't hear it at Southeastern 16. You won't hear it from me. You're going to hear a lot of people be like Tyler Tanner and his supporting cast. And it's going to be like not a lot of talk about why that supporting cast is really good and complimentary, but it is. And I think they would have made the Sweet 16 had they not had to play a road game in the second round.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, it's another reason that the committee just clearly ignores conference tournaments to do what they did to Vanderbilt, do them dirty like that.
Yeah.
That's going to be a team with a chip on their shoulder. I expect them to play deep into March.
Yeah, the thing that's different about this Vanderbilt team than the past two Byington teams, in my opinion, is their lineup versatility. You're not going to be able to match up Nightmare Vanderbilt next year. It's not going to happen anymore. If they want to go like super big and go Sebastian Williams Adams at the three, Berkey Buchtengel at the four, and Bangot Dak at the five and go massive, they can do that. And if they want to go super small and go, you know, Sebastian Williams, not super small, but just Williams Adams at the four instead of him at down at the three, and you play the three guards. You know, people forget Chandler Bing played 20 plus minutes for every single game in March, like was a key piece for them down the stretch. This is a top 20 recruiting class for freshmen.
That's right.
The top 20 freshman class here. You've got, I want to call them all three top 100, the power forward, Jackson Sheffield, like depending on what outlet you look at, it might be like 98, it might be like right inside the top 100, but Ethan Mbako and Anthony Brown, the guard and the wing, those are two top 100 guys to fall. And I mean, you got to project either junior T.O. Barrett or sophomore coming off 17 points a game, Ace Glass, to be a bench piece.
Like, yeah.
It's not the same Vandy as last year.
And that's so, you go get a guy like T.O. Barrett, and it's sort of like all the programs that have gotten Mo Diabate. You're just getting a dude that knows how to win.
Yep.
And like nothing's going to rattle T.O. He's been the lead guard on a team that beat Florida in the last couple of years. Like, you know, he played 30 minutes of that game and they moved Ann off the ball from Missouri. And, he can play. It's a good supporting cast. And like you said, it's going to be a much more versatile team. Yeah, I really could have had him higher than I put him, which was 14th. And then my last SEC team in the top 16, Big Blue Nation, is you at 16, the Kentucky Wildcats, right ahead of Alabama, who I had 17th. We'll talk Kentucky first. Like,
Yep.
Three of these guys are really good basketball players. I tweeted it from the FBH account the other day. It was like, Bilal Momcilovic is really good, man. Like, and Mark Pope is going to find ways to get him open, and I honestly will not be stunned if he shoots like 45% again from three.
Yeah.
Malachi Moreno is really good. The on-off splits.
Yeah.
Here's a fun one for you. According to CBB Analytics, there were only two SEC players with better on-off splits last year than Malachi Moreno.
Really?
That's it.
Wow.
Our guy, Ruben Chinyelu, was one.
Think who else?
I mean, this is staggeringly awesome stuff.
Who else was just absolutely monumental to their team?
He's gone. He's going to be a lottery pick.
Swain?
LeBaron Filon Jr.
Oh, Filon. Yep, that makes sense.
And I mean, I don't even like Filon played so much. It's kind of small sample size theater.
Yeah.
But even then, and you think about when Filon did sit and they were like garbage time against teams that were terrible in the non-con, and his on-off splits were still stupendous.
Yeah.
I mean, Malachi Moreno is a difference-making player.
He is.
And I think there could be like an Alex Kanin type sophomore year leap for him too, where the thing with Kanin as a freshman was that you could see that there's a future pro pretty quickly.
Yep.
But there were also games where he got 3 fouls in 5 minutes. A little bit like Braylon Mullins early in the year for UConn.
Yeah. Honestly.
Like, and it's kind of like, well, you know, if he could just stay on the floor. The Florida game, when they came down to Gainesville, he got 2 fouls in 4 minutes. And he's just like, I get that Ruben Chinyelu's physicality makes people mad. I mean, ask Santo Cyril, right?
Right.
But you have to chill out and keep playing. You can't be stupid. And I think Malachi will play within himself more. And then the third guy I think is really good is Zoom Diallo, who I think is probably pretty underrated. Yep. And I think he was so quick to go to Kentucky that we didn't talk about it much. But he's just very steady. And the other thing about him is he makes more sense. He makes more sense than last year did.
Yeah.
Because I thought for a guy that does not shoot well, I thought Jalen Lowe like needed to shoot a lot. and I was one of the guys who chuckled at the, if they had Lowe stuff. Cause I was like, well, if you look at the on off splits from when they did,
yeah,
you're not helping yourself much. Like it's a ball dominant guard that can't shoot, but likes to shoot. And you know, when they ran things through Aberdeen dribbles a lot, but it was a lot better, quite honestly. And you know, it wasn't really till Lowe went out that they found the right role for Colin Chandler, and that kind of mattered. Zoom Diallo is not going to have any of those problems. Like he's going to get the ball where it needs to go. In fact, that's where I get annoyed because I don't know what they're doing around him. It's like Alex Wilkins is not a good fit for any of those players. Now he's exciting. But he's kind of like a ball dominant wing that needs to have the ball a lot to be effective. I don't know if that's a great idea on this group. I don't know. I mean, the pieces around those three awesome players don't make a ton of sense to me, but I think the second weekend upside is obvious.
I feel like you and I have had a great pulse on Kentucky in the off seasons the past few years. Last year, I remember we did this and Kentucky is talked about as the number one team in the country, you know, or two or three, you know, right up there. And I remember you and I going back and forth and being like, I've got questions here. I've got questions there. I don't buy in it. And I got chewed up last offseason for
So did I.
Just chewed up. I did deep dive into like the 3-point numbers. I was like, I don't think this team's going to shoot that well. I don't know how well they're going to rebound and this and that. And a lot of those problems came to fruition. I haven't been panicking on Kentucky this offseason. I was holding out on the Moreno news, and I was holding out on a star wing. And so now that they've kind of got both of those, I'm right around like a 15, you know, number 15. You'll probably lose a few games. You drop down to 22 in KenPom, and then you win a big game on the road, and you're up to 17, you're up to 16. And like, that's where I think this team kind of lands, because like you said, Momcilovic, you're going to take the best shooter in the country. I mean, that's going to be a great take. There you go. Back him up with Cam Williams. All right, let's go with the three. You got a 7-footer taking a sophomore leap that's got NBA aspirations, that, you know, potential fringe first rounder type of grade, early second rounder. All right, let's go. I mean, we got to get big. Love that. And then Zoom Diallo, like you mentioned, you love the assist rate. I think an underrated thing about Zoom Diallo is his free throw rate as well. Very physical, can get to the line. And, you know, late clock situation, just have Zoom put his shoulder down and, all right, maybe we draw a foul. Maybe we have an opportunity for an offensive rebound. And then the four, it's like, I don't want to put Justin McBride, you know, 6'7", mid-major transfer, to project as the starter at the four. But he is also kind of one of those glue guys. He's 240 pounds. He's a senior, can knock down a shot. He's probably going to be a piece. The internationals are always a question mark. But my thing with you, I could not agree more. When you were saying that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is my exact same take on Kentucky. The Alex Wilkins, kind of Jerome Morton, maybe it's, does Cam Williams develop a tighter handle in one offseason? I don't think so. Like, I think it could, we could 100% get to February, and Jerome Morton is just kind of this like nice, solid senior. He doesn't stick his nose in there too much, but when he's open for a shot, Zoom, kick it out, he'll knock one down. And like, that's kind of how it's going to shake out there. I'm not just of the group that's like Alex Wilkins lock. He's going to be a 30 minute per game guy. I do have some questions there. So I'm right there with you. I think this team's going to, you know, give or take a 5 ranking, right around 15 to 20s. Maybe they go on one of those, you know, non-conference Kentucky runs where they beat the Zags and they, you know, put together another win and they're up at 10. But like, yeah, right around the teens.
And they're going to have a game. They're going to have a game or two where Momcilovic just shoots someone out of a gym.
Yeah. Makes 9 threes.
You know, and that's the thing. Like, everybody's like, well, you had Joshua Jefferson and they had all these other pieces. And it's like, that's nice. And all those things are true. Also, like, they beat St. John's because he went 4-for-5 in the second half from three.
Yeah.
Like, they played the last possession game with Arizona on senior night in Tucson because he went like 8-of-11 from three, right? Yeah. Like, those are just the things that he can do. Like, he can keep them in a game where they're not having their best night. And that's why it was so essential. Like, I'm not sure that there's a bigger impact transfer from like where a team was to like just the stability of the floor now.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know how much of like the ceiling, we'll see. There's other questions, but the floor, now that Momcilovic is there, I'm less worried about like the roof caving in. Now, the questions around Mark Pope, the existential ones, are going to continue because it's Kentucky. Because their rival is set up to get a 1 seed for the 3rd straight year, and that's going to make all those people furious. And then their other rival, Louisville, is getting real serious. And, you know, if Florida's really good and Louisville's really good and Kentucky loses in the second round, there's going to be questions about the head coach at Kentucky. Sorry, that goes with the territory. But I'm not as worried about the floor. Talk to me about Alabama, because Nate Oates – I'm not as high on Amari Allen as everybody else. I think he's really good. I just thought it was like I saw him in some like top five returning players list, and I was like, come on. Like,
yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah. But anyway, tell folks about the Tide.
So the interesting thing with Alabama is they kind of have like a no like top five. It's funny because we just joked about Amari Allen being top five. I'd say like no absolute all SEC stars, but everyone's just rock solid. Like if you want to put Amari Allen into that class and you're projecting even more of a loop, I'm not going to push back on that at all. But like Brandon Garrison and Drew Fielder from Boise State, they're not stars, but they're not bad. I mean, there's worse projected power five starters than a Brandon Garrison, a senior Brandon Garrison or a senior Drew Fielder. You know, it's not terrible. Keaton Briscoe was not bad at all last year when he played, and he single-handedly kept him in the Illinois non-conference game. So you have that. Jamarian Davis Fleming, a nice 6'10 sophomore who's taken a little bit of a leap, who was getting SEC minutes there. And you have three top 50 freshmen that are all 6'6. Caden Samuels, Jackson Richardson, Terrace Bowie, all of them 6'6, all of them top 50. Now, I don't know who's going to end up being the one that maybe should have been more like top 20 and the one that should have been more like 75, but probably going to shake out that way. I've heard a lot of great stuff about Caden Samuels. He kind of had an injury that bumped him down the rankings a little bit. But, like, my thing with Alabama is, you know, no one's going to be, like, jumping out at the page. Holy smokes, they're a matchup nightmare. They're going to win every battle at this position no matter what. But you list the top 10 guys on their team, and it's like, well, they're probably playing 10.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think so too. I love the depth. I think the way that they've been so consistent is they have the depth to play ideologically the way they want to play all the time. Yeah. But now they're going to have some of the front court bulk to kind of compete with the teams who make that harder. Like, look, and I think, you know, they go and they get Mark Adams, and like they clearly – it's not like Nate Oates isn't aware that they have to guard better.
Yeah.
I mean, he's said it over and over. I just think they have the pieces to do that this year. So I trust him a little more. I know I have him at 17th, which is actually a little lower than I had him last year. But really that's because, like, there's not a file on for me to kind of grasp onto.
Right.
And I do think it's going to take Nate always plays a really hard schedule, and it's going to take them some time to figure out who the guy is late in games. Because I got news for you. Like, Amari Allen's a little more like Tommy H in that, like, he's going to play – it's flow of the game, and yes, he can take over a game, but it's not like, hey, let's run this play for Amari Allen or Thomas Houck with 30 seconds to go.
Right.
I know Florida thinks that maybe they can do that a little more with Tommy this year, but the point is keeping it on Alabama. Like, I think that's going to be the big question. And does one of those freshmen emerge as kind of one of those options? I think that's very possible. We'll see. But I'm never going to not have a Nate Oates team in the top 20. And I still like them.
Yeah, I think the wild card for me is kind of like the Bristow Drew Fielder. You know, like, I feel like we know what to expect from a Brandon Garrison now. Put him out there for 15 to 20 minutes. He'll give you good energy for 15 to 20 minutes. He's not going to knock anyone's socks off. Get Jamarian Davis Fleming in there for 10. He'll take a little bit of a sophomore leap. But what are we getting from the four? Kind of like that's is it Amari Allen? Are they going small? You know, like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, the kind of what they do next to whoever they want to play at center, they got a lot of options. I mean, it's versatility, but it's a question I got.
So Arkansas, the SEC tournament champion, is the last team I had in my preseason top 25. I had them at 20. I had them in my preseason top 10 last year for all the Hogs fans who fast forwarded to this portion of the podcast where I talk about you. You all know that. You guys know that I loved the team last year when a lot of people and analytics didn't necessarily. And I looked pretty good in March. I just think the Malik Thomas thing is a big deal, man. Like, I probably had him top 10 if Malik came back. And that's – I love Billy Richmond. But, like, Billy Richmond, he needs a Malik Thomas to thrive, I think. Because it's just another guy that isn't necessarily going to, you know, be a guy you can run a play for. Jeremiah Wilkinson could go get you a bucket now. But
yeah,
but I would prefer Jeremiah Wilkinson to be, like, my sixth man, not, like, the sun around which my offense orbits. And that's kind of where I'm at, right? I think we'll see. Like, maybe Mika Murinen is, like, awesome. And yeah, maybe, you know, if anybody could just – Jordan Smith Jr., like, if anybody could just say, hey, you guys haven't seen my freshman play, but I have, it's John Calipari. But
true.
But, like, by – I will say by June 4th last year, we had all seen, like, Darius Acuff at the Iverson Classic, right? Like, we knew that that guy was a dude.
Yeah.
And that's not the vibe from Jordan Smith Jr. yet, as much as Arkansas fans love him. And
he is, yeah, tough.
You know, so that's where I'm at on Arkansas. I think they're going to be good, but I don't know if they're second weekend good.
Yeah, every year there's at least one team with a large fan base that you don't love the team. And last year for me, that was Kentucky. I just ate crow all summer for it. I don't see it. That's me with Arkansas this year. Yeah. I just don't love them. I really don't. I'm not a huge Jeremiah Wilkinson guy. There's one guy I like to read. One guy, his name's John Fendler. He does some like Substack stuff, and he calls Jeremiah Wilkinson a category of player. Now, I don't like this word, but he calls him an empty calorie scorer.
Yeah.
You look at the box score after the game, he has 24, but he's got one assist, one turnover, one rebound, and didn't impact the game really anywhere else, didn't do anything defensively. And so it's like, I'm not the biggest advocate. Like, I love Jeremiah Wilkinson's spurt ability and his offense and stuff, but like you said, centering around him or like making him really elevate your team, he doesn't do that. That's not what he does. And so I think, honestly, Abdou Toure – we come February, Abdou Toure might be the one running most of the show there instead of Wilkinson. And Wilkinson's more like a six man spurt guy. But I absolutely love Billy Richmond. And I just mentioned Toure, JJ Andrews, another 6'6" guy. You gotta like him as well. But this front court, man, I am very worried. And now Cooper Bowser can do some decent stuff. He's an athletic power forward. Played some five at Furman. He didn't play the five this last year, pretty much. They moved him down to the power four, but he's only 215 pounds. He's not a very, you know, stocky guy. Last year, Malik Ewan had the 16th highest offensive rebounding percentage in the country. 15.8% offensive rebounding for Ewan was fantastic. Brazil at your four had a defensive rebounding percentage just under 21%.
Cleaner. Wow.
In the Southern Conference last year, Bowser, 6% offensive rebounding, 16% defensive rebounding. Those numbers aren't going up by margin. I mean, maybe if he strengthens up, maybe he holds those numbers. I mean, even that would be, you know, tough in this, and with rebounding over the guys he's going to have to rebound over. And then in terms of highly rated, you know, highly recruited freshmen, Mika Murinen's one of like the biggest wild cards there is in terms of if you're looking at like a top 30 recruiting list of freshmen,
yeah,
and who you can just trust and you know what you're getting from. Murinen's not one of those guys. He's very up and down. He had some international games and stretches where he played very well, and then he had some stretches where the coach literally wouldn't even put him on the floor. And that's your two, man front court right now. That's all you got. Or redshirt freshman Semedo. So it's like, I mean, the other pieces are not bad pieces, but Cooper Bowser picks up two fouls, and you've got Billy Richmond playing power forward for the next 25 minutes.
It's like, true, it's not true, good. Man. That is not what you want. No. I still had him. It's just the talent. I still got him in my top 25.
Yeah, I mean,
so
more of just so like repeat in top three SEC. I don't know if this team does that.
Yeah, they're not going to repeat in the top three of the SEC. Yeah. I can go ahead and answer that question. I can tell you that that is not going to occur. I'll do something fun if it does. To be determined. All right, who'd I leave out? And I will caveat that I had an SEC team at 26, which was Texas A&M. So, okay. And sorry, look, if you fast forward to Aggies fans, Bryson Ward's not going to be eligible. Okay, he signed two Exhibit 10 contracts. He ain't playing point guard for you.
That'll be a blow.
I'm sorry. That's not happening. The Heat signed him to an NBA contract. The Knickerbockers signed him to an NBA contract.
Go next.
He signed NBA contracts. The NCAA has been very clear. And you're not going to have him on your team. Okay. Professor Blackman is done with the A&M. But I promised we would say, Max Marr, who did I mess up on? Who should I have spoken about?
I am high on Jalen Shelley, by the way. He doesn't get talked about much when you're
– He's good.
Talking about Texas A&M, but he's got a really, really good defensive rebound rate for the wing, and I think that might allow them to get away with playing Mbako and Clements as a front court because Shelley can rebound so well. I very underrated aspect of the team. Because I was like, I missed Rashawn Agee last year. Just completely whiffed on him. Did not expect him to have that aspect. So I'm like, what am I missing here? What am I missing? I think it might be kind of the physicality that Shelley brings kind of allows them to go super small in the backcourt. And Zach Clements, not really your ideal SEC center. But
I kind of think Tyshawn Archie, like, I know that Aggies fans are going to be pissed about my rant about Shelley or my Warren rant. But like, honestly, like Tyshawn Archie might be a better compliment for PJ Haggerty anyway.
You like Archie to compliment him better than Reese?
No, either way. Like, I just think that, like, I don't think that they necessarily, like, you don't, if you have PJ Haggerty, you don't need a traditional point guard.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's not, Haggerty's not Walter Quinton Jr., but like, you know, or Jalen Brunson or any of the, you know, but you don't need that per se because Haggerty's going to get downhill constantly. He's going to get to the free throw line. He's going to create for other people because he always commands help. Like, I just don't know how much you needed Bryson Warren, who was like a semi-productive G League player anyway, man. You know, and then I think as long as McKenzie and Mbako is healthy, you know, you're going to have opportunities to have some of your bigs that can put the ball on the deck too.
Yeah.
And they're going to create transition baskets anyway.
Oh yeah. They'll be flying.
I like them. I had them 26. Who do we leave out?
I don't know if I necessarily think any of these teams would be top 25.
Okay.
But it's hard to not expect a decent season from LSU if all of their guys become eligible. Like, that's a big question mark, massive question mark. Like, Madar is stretching the military exemption to its absolute, like, maximum. But that guy, Madar, just dropped 41 points on 9 of 10 shooting from 3. In a rivalry game last weekend.
Correct. In their
Israeli league. Like 9 of 10 from 3. 40 bomb. In a rivalry game. He's going to be 26. If this guy's playing, like, come on. It's not great for the sport, but they're going to be a pretty good team. There's just question marks.
He ain't going to be playing.
I don't know. I didn't even mention RJ Lewis because he ain't going to be playing either.
And by the way, RJ Lewis's case is a lot more clear than Bryson Warren's because RJ Lewis went to college, so it's Bediako.
Right, there's no way.
But, you know, I think the NCAA, you're going to see some of these dudes that had signed Exhibit 10s, and the NCAA is going to deny a bunch of these guys coming up.
It's going to screw some teams. Not screw them, but it's going to set them back a piece for sure. So I'd say a team that's put together right now, I don't love how it's put together, but just like guys that are not bad is Missouri. I just don't know how it's all going to work. But, I mean, Jason Crow, if I had to pick a freshman of the year right now, my vote would be Jason Crow.
Okay.
Not because I think he's literally the best freshman, Neil, but because who's bringing the ball up in a one-possession game other than Jason Crow? I mean, that's they need him. They have to have him out there all the time. Like, Trent Pierce is 6'10". Bryson Tiller is 6'11". Trent Burns is 7'5". Jalen Carey is 6'8" and plays a forward. Nah, he's not going to play on the wing.
Yeah.
Tony Bryant, the freshman, 6'10". Maybe can play on the wing, but honestly, more of a power forward. Maybe could play on the wing. That's five guys that are all like power forward or center. Five of them. I don't know. Dennis Gates is probably going to do that thing he does every year where he plays 17 players for the entire non-conference, and you really have no clue what the rotation is until February. So, like, I don't know how it's going to work out, but I mean, Jason Crow, Bryson Tiller, Jameer Jones is not bad at all. Jalen Carey will give you some good rebounding. Tony Bryant's a top 50 recruit. Like, there's a lot of talent there. I don't know how it's all going to fit, though.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with them, too. I'm also that way with Georgia and Ole Miss, especially Ole Miss. I'll use Ole Miss as an example of where I think retention is really important. And like
Pinkins,
if I had been, yeah, like, but like losing James Scott, who was really productive at the end of the year, like that's such an error to me. And it's an error where like we will never know what Chris Beard really thinks of that until he's not at Ole Miss anymore.
Right.
Because it just seemed kind of like a consummate Chris Beard prototype guy. And he hits the portal like a week after it opens. And you're like, huh?
Yeah.
You know, and these are the choices that get made in roster building season. And like I thought, you know, now again, betting against the Chris Beard team to miss the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row is pretty wild. But I don't see it right now. Who knows? Maybe they'll prove me wrong. You know, but for them in Georgia, I just feel like there's some retention things that occurred and or didn't occur, and they're problematic. Now, Georgia, a little different because I think you could make an argument that Georgia did okay. They at least came out in the wash.
Right.
Like you lose Wilkinson, but you keep Kenon Catchings. Like it's kind of – I don't know. You know, but I don't think Mike White's team, I don't think they got any better. I don't think they solved any of the problems they have.
Yeah, the thing with George is I do like the retention, and then Freddie DeLeon's a nice piece.
Yeah.
But, like, after that, there's nothing. Like, I don't think Brady Dunlap is going to be a significant SEC contributor. He might have a game or two where he splashes some heat check threes and stuff. But when it comes to crunch time, it's February. I don't think he's going to be a huge – you know, needle mover. If there's a single injury to anyone on this starting lineup, I mean, I don't love the depth. If James Scott gets in any sort of foul trouble, I don't know who's playing center.
Right.
you know, so I do like the versatility at the four. You can go small and go Millender, Blue Kane, Freddie DeLeon, and then go Catchings at the four. You can kind of have a three guard lineup running around there. Like I do.
Yeah.
There is. If you have both Stag and Catchings, they can play some games with them, going small or big. But the depth behind that is a little bit worrisome. The thing with Ole Miss is it's going to be a decent offensive team. I'm all bought in on the Patton Pinkins jump. I think he's going to be a double-digit scorer. And then Sulepa from Pitt and True from Arizona State were both top 10 in the ACC and Big 12 in offensive rebounding. They're not very good rim protectors, but they do know how to crash some offensive glass. So like you combine another year of college for Camerdine, Pinkins taking a leap, you bring in two good offensive rebounders, and I think the offense should be decent. But you compare this team to the Sweet 16 team, like, I'm like, where'd the NIL go?
Yeah.
Like, the roster go? I mean, we had a two-man punch of Juju Murray and Sean Padula. Throw in Matt Morrell, NBA hopeful also. You can retain Jamin Brakefield and Malik Dia for year on year. You bring in a Dre Davis. I'm like, whoa, we got some studs here. Like,
yeah,
big time roster. And then you look at the roster this year and it's like, I don't know, maybe it's like a few million under everybody else's.
Yeah. Both the Mississippi schools just lacking the money.
Like, yeah.
In that South Carolina zone where it's like, you can't keep putting your guy in these positions.
You can get like one star and then the money falls off.
Yeah. So, and for Ole Miss and Miss State too, I think, in my opinion, just because of the consistency Chris Jans was showing out of the gate. Like, it's kind of interesting that there had been that drop off in that NIL expenditure, because there's clear proof of concept. And Chris Beard is Chris Beard. He's coaching the Final Four in the national title game. Like, I don't know what you brought him in for if you're not going to give him the support that he needs to win big. We'll see. Like, you're right. Like, they're going to score. Georgia, you mentioned, I felt like the Samto-Cyrille thing was just devastating. I might have even had him in the top 25 if Samto was back with kind of him and Catchings and Millender. Like, that would have been a core. It would have been hard to ignore. But yeah, I don't know now. And then Auburn. Should I finish my show with a sigh for Auburn too? What do you think, man? Like, the Auburn fans have been the ones in my mentions now, because I've defended Stephen Pearl, but I've also said, like, you know, I don't know, maybe Tahad Pettiford is freshman Tahad Pettiford, you know, but I don't know what I think of these guys.
Yeah, it's a lot of questions around Tahad and KO. Like, I love that, you know, like Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton, to bring both of them back, and that's your starting one and two. They're going to win you some games. Rupes DeVicious should be a really good international, but with all the internationals, you have a little bit of a question mark. You don't know 100%. And then this front court kind of rotation, you kind of got the four of Troy's Thomas Dowd, Owen Freeman. He shined as a freshman at Iowa, not shined, but just wasn't bad, but then had the injury and couldn't get it together last year. Buki Aboy from Santa Clara, and then Narcisse Ngoy, another international 7-footer. Aboy is like really good efficiency numbers last year, but he's playing 12 minutes a game, 15 minutes a game. You know, right. Like, these are just his three WCC tournament and then the one Kentucky NCAA tournament game. So just four March postseason games. He starts all four of them, 17 minutes, 12, 14, 17. Like, how much is that going up this year? I don't know how much. So I'm having a tough time projecting out this front court. Like, is it going to be Owen Freeman is the main guy, and then Aboy's just in spurts off the bench? Is Thomas Dowd physical enough to play an SEC four? Or you have to slide Dowd down to the three. It's like, I like what they brought back in the backcourt. And I think George Kimball also, coming off an injury from Vandy.
Yeah.
Crazy numbers the year before when he was at his mid-major. So it's like, I like the backcourt stuff, but I don't know if I buy in all the way. Like, I trust, if you just want to compare him to Alabama, because it's kind of similar. They kind of got like the four-man rotation.
Right.
Instead of like Dowd, Aboy, Owen Freeman, Fielder, Garrison, Bristow, I feel a little bit more trust in them.
Oh, me too. Like, I thought, you know, like, again, you mentioned the Kimball, like, they're really going to have to rely on him. He better be healthy and ready to go. Because after Overton and Tahad, like, that's kind of your third guard option. And then, you know, like, again, like the retention thing, Vanderbilt, and it shows you where Vanderbilt is, because they can make an NIL offer to Sebastian Williams-Adams that Auburn is not going to be able to match.
Yeah.
Because Auburn wants to stay committed to Todd. Like, Auburn made its choice, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, we saw Sebastian Williams-Adams play some pretty impactful minutes last year against good teams as a freshman. And so, you know, now, okay, like, Bucky Aboy played on a good team. Like, you're bringing in guys, but I'm not sure where any of the upgrades are, really.
Like, if you want to put it into perspective, 2 years ago, your front court rotation was Jani Broome, Dylan Cardwell, and Chaney Johnson. Jani Broome, Dylan Cardwell, and Chaney Johnson. And now it's your boy, Thomas Dowd, and Owen Freeman. I mean,
yeah,
you don't feel great about that. You just don't.
No. Nope. That's where we're at, man. That's where we're at. It's going to be fun. I still think it's the best league in the country. I mean, like I said, I got 8 of them in my top 26. I probably got 9 of them in my top 30. I didn't go all the way to 30. I just put A&M at 26 and stopped writing. I go back and forth on A&M from day to day. I still think there will be some sort of come to Jesus moment for Bucky where he realizes that he cannot play that way in the Power Five.
Yeah.
Similarly to the way that Nate Oates, even though people insist that this didn't happen, Nate Oates realized, like, if he was going to play that way, he had to recruit differently.
Yeah.
So it'll be either or for Bucky. He will either continue to try to play that way with nice NIL and portal mashups, or he'll go get like Brandon Miller and they'll be like, ha ha. Now I can play how I want. Weapon. Well, it's amazing what a top 5 pick can do for your defense. A guy probably Charlotte people tell you should have been all defensive team this year in the NBA. So anyway, you know, it's going to be fun to watch the evolution of Buckyball at College Station because he's so young and he ain't going anywhere. But it's not – he brought his own, like, unique thing, and Todd Golden will be the first to tell you. He's like, I just got my ass kicked by Gonzaga a lot and decided that was a really good way to play basketball.
Yeah.
You know? And so the one like Todd wasn't trying to do anything that hadn't been proven already. And here we are. So Max Barr at Max Barr CBB. I think, and I've told people this, period, like, I think one of the best young talents in the college basketball space. Max, appreciate you, man. And if I haven't renewed your Patreon membership, I got to send you a new one. Appreciate you.
The best Patreon in the land, Florida Basketball Hour, right there. Yeah, folks, check out my check out my visual depth charts. It's kind of
awesome.
It's kind of my biggest project I do all year. You can find them pinned to my Twitter at all times. It's visual. You might be off on a player or two. I can't nail them all down perfectly, but it's more just so all the players that Neil and I just spurted out at you, you're like, who the heck is Bryce Dessert? Who are these players? You need to put a face to a name. Check out those visual depth charts. It's my big project. I just finished it up this week.
All right, y'all. Enjoy. Appreciate you, Max.
Thank you so much, Neil.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details. Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.